the last 7 or 8 podcasts that I have done have been within an hour of me waking
up. So exactly how I felt today. Gotcha.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You woke up like 13 seconds before we started recording.
Hello and welcome to the Rich Woman's Re Podcast, episode beta 44 for Saturday, the 15th of August, 2015. This is a show where two lifelong friends talk about geek stuff and whatever else comes to mind. I'm Amos, and that guy right there trying not to spill his beer all over his microphone. That's Kent. How you doing, man?
I am doing good, man. It is so great to be doing the podcast right now. I am in such a great mood.
Oh, I don't even know what it was that almost got you during the pre-show, but you about shot your beer everywhere.
But I didn't, that was and that's great. What's important.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's what you say. We can't tell. All right. So how has your week been, man?
Good.
How has your 2 weeks been? Because you weren't even on last week.
Yeah, yeah. So, all right. So last week went camping.
Yeah.
With Complete Martial Arts, my karate dojo. We do an annual camping trip up in the mountains, and it was so much fun, and it was so relaxing. Right up until I started getting emails about my job, the job that I'm trying to get.
Right.
It was posting, and you need to apply for it immediately because it's only open for a very short window.
It's like 5 days or something.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh. 5 or 7 days.
Yeah. I was like, okay, well, that's cool. So now I'm checking my phone like every 2 seconds to see if the thing posts. And then it posted. So I had to go down the mountain, which is fine. It's only like a half hour drive or something like that. But then it turns out that I didn't have all of the documentation that I needed for applying for this job because... Right. I'm a military veteran, but I'm not officially retired yet, not till the end of this month. So I don't have a DD Form 214, which is the piece of paper that proves that you're a veteran. So in lieu of that, I needed to get my commander to sign a letter. Basically, it's called a certification of service. Oh, jumping through hoops. And I got it done, but I had to...
All the things you left the military to avoid, you are
right.
Now redoing.
Right. So then I did as much as I could. I got my resume the way it needed to be according to the job listing, I guess.
Posting.
Because they're called KSAs. It's like... I can't even think what it stands for, but it's like skills that you're required to have to perform this job, and those
basically,
keywords have to be in your resume.
Yeah, your resume has to be worded in a specific way to match up to the words that are
exactly
on the job.
Exactly. So I had to tweak up my resume
because it's all computerized. That's why.
Right. Yeah, yeah. The computer will parse it, and once it says, oh, okay, this looks like it's going to match, then a person actually looks at it.
Right.
And so I had to tweak the resume up, and I had to jump through all the hoops to get this letter. And it wasn't until the next day that it got signed by the commander. So I had to come back down the mountain again to get the letter, upload it, actually apply for the job. And then when you're actually applying for the job, there's a whole bunch of questions that you have to answer about, you know, what is your ability level in this area? What is your ability level in this area? And there's like... a million questions. So it was another like half day that I spent down here, and it's like, oh my God. But once I finally got done with all that crap, then I was able to relax, and it was fun. It was a lot of fun. The day before the last day we were there, we did a ground navigation course that I was part of the team that set it up and ran a station and all that. And I, beforehand, we taught skills to all the participants that were the skills that would be required to complete the course. And the course that I taught was first aid. And I basically just taught basic splints. And it was really pretty fun because I was at one of the marker locations and I was pretending to be hurt. And I was kind of role playing Then, oh, I broke my leg. And then they had the team. It was two-person teams. And they had to find materials, find sticks and things to use to make the splint. It was pretty cool.
Did you have the area staged with certain pieces, or were they just really randomly finding stuff out in the woods?
They had to find their own sticks. I had some belts and things, because I had because I was pretending that I had been hiking, and I fell and fell over some rocks or something like that, and I broke my leg, and the contents of my backpack spilled out onto the ground.
And oh, nice touch.
Yeah, there were some straps and some like a t-shirt in there that they could rip up and use and stuff like that. But the sticks, they had to find themselves. And every time a team fixed me up, they would just kind of leave, I'd mark them off as having completed the task. And then they would just, they would take off. And then I would undo everything that they did. And I would throw, the straps or the shirt or whatever they used, I would throw it off to the side. And then the sticks, I would throw as far away from me as I could. So people would have to go on this hunt. It was fun. It was a lot of fun.
Good deal.
Yeah.
Speaking of making stuff up on the fly, I did some stand-up comedy this weekend.
That's beautiful. How did that go?
As in, like, last night. It sucked.
Really? Were they throwing rotten fruit and vegetables?
They weren't, but only because they didn't have any, I think. Essentially, it was an opportunity came up on Thursday afternoon to host some comedians that services had brought in for the E-Club. And with me working a 14-hour shift that day, I didn't have a whole lot of time to really prepare. And then the following day on Friday was another long day. So I had about an hour to genuinely prepare for the show. And I didn't get to practice my routine. I had a decent routine. It was pretty funny, but I strayed off quite a bit. And every time I strayed off, I could feel myself losing the audience. And I only had like 5 minutes of material, something really quick, really simple, just to get the other, the actual comedians on stage. And that's essentially what I was doing. I wasn't following my script because I hadn't spent enough time to really memorize it and get it down, hit the key points, and certainly hadn't had a chance to practice it in front of a live person. So, but it was another good learning experience, a different stage than what I had done before, and a different audience, totally different audience with different limitations. On bass, you can't be as open and free about things as you can off bass. Mm-hmm. So you got to kind of watch the content of the jokes. You can't take it, past the PG level and that kind of stuff. And But I had a good time, and I learned quite a bit from the other comedians that were there, the two guys that I was introducing. Just in how they did it and how they, talking to them backstage and how they prepare for shows and things like that. So it was a good time. I enjoyed it.
That's really cool, man.
Then I went and did karaoke, so.
I really envy you in getting into the stand-up thing. That's that is just really cool, man.
Yeah.
So good job on that.
All right. So so that was pretty much my week other than a whole bunch of working, just actual working.
Yeah,
actually doing my job, just being at work, I should say.
Right. But by the way, last week you did a one mic show for the podcast, for this podcast. And I thought it was a good job, man.
Appreciate it.
You went 30 minutes, and that's pretty good.
We'll see. We haven't gotten any other feedback on it, so I'm interested to see, to read what other people have thought about me being on the mic for 30 minutes, because that was a show I actually had a lot of preparation for. Because, typically we record on Thursdays. You weren't available Thursday. And then Friday came along, and that's when your camping strip really came in. And so at that point, that's when I knew it was you were not going to make it. And I really wanted to make sure that we have a show every week. So I made the call and was like, I'm just going to have to do this myself. So Friday night, I wrote down some of my notes and really did some research Saturday and recorded it before I went back over to my other job thing.
Right. Right.
So,
yeah, I'm going to do my best to honor that as well. If you've got something going on and can't make it, if I got to do a one mic thing, doing it.
Yeah. It was really a matter of, because of the job application, your job application posting when it did, we didn't have a chance to really reach out and get a guest And we didn't have someone already scheduled up, so.
Right, right.
Yeah, but making it happen either way. So, something else we both made happen this week.
Rich Benjamin.
We both watched a TED Talk, the same TED Talk.
Yeah, Rich Benjamin, My Road Trip Through the Whitest Towns in America. And you watched Rich Benjamin, My Road Trip Through the Whitest Towns in America. That's so weird.
Weird.
But this is actually kind of cool because we both watched the same one. We can bounce ideas off each other and talk about the same
right.
talk. So this is kind of neat, right,
so start out with your impressions, man. What did you think about it?
Okay. So Rich, it's a black dude. We'll just put that out there. He wanted to do sort of a social experiment and travel to what he calls Whitopia. And it's basically these all white or nearly all white towns that have sprung up around America. And he went to three of them. He went to St. George, Utah, Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, and Forsyth County, Georgia. The criteria that he had for these towns, they had to have at least 6% population growth since 2000. The majority of that growth had to be from white migrants. So basically, people that were tired of living in a city or living where they were in the United States moved to these communities. And the place had to just have charm, a very pleasant look and feel to it. Very, very much Aussie and Harriet type.
He was not trying to find a white ghetto.
Right. Right. Exactly. And yeah, very interesting results. I mean, it's nothing shocking. Obviously, it's all white communities or very nearly, and he was the standout. I think it was actually pretty funny that he said that the first two houses that he rented in the first two cities, or towns, I guess, he rented them by phone.
Right.
Because there was a good chance that he wouldn't have...
He did not go and get a hotel or something like that. He actually rented an apartment or a house, or he lived there. He changed his residence to that location.
Right. He fully integrated in the community.
Yeah, completely. This is a 2-year trip, and he lived in three cities, and it was kind of equally divided up. So you're looking at like what, 9 months in each place, 8 months in each place.
Right.
Yeah. So it was very interesting. He really dove into the local culture. In the first place he went to, he picked up golf and found out that, he actually picked up golf as his own personal hobby. He loves golf now.
Yeah.
And the second place he went to in Utah, was it Idaho?
Idaho is the second one. Idaho. Coeur d'Alene, Idaho.
Idaho. He ended up joining a white segregist community. And somebody came.
They're
up
not
and said,
white supremacists. They're
yeah, we're,
white
we're not white supremacists. We're white segregists. Separatists.
Yeah,
we're white separatists. We don't hate you. We just don't want to live where you live.
Yeah, we don't think we're better than you. We just don't want to be around you.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, all right. I can see how you could justify that to yourself. Whatever.
Right.
And then the third community was down there in Georgia, and it was basically a huge church community. And that's where he said he felt most welcome and had the fewest problems. I thought it was interesting that, he made his reservations by phone so as to not be discriminated against prior to arriving. he integrated as best he could into each of the communities, and he never really felt overly discriminated against in his actions, but he could tell that it was a different feel for him versus the other people.
Yeah, to me, the biggest takeaway, and this is something that I observe all the time in daily life, is that on a personal level, on an interpersonal interaction level, people treat him very much like an equal. They're very affable. they're very friendly. They, you know, hey man, how's it going? Whatever. Treat them just as they would anyone else. But as a community,
there's a distinct bias.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. But any individual that you go up to, with I'm sure with a few exceptions, but any individual that you go up to, you're going to be treated with decency and respect. But the community as a whole would be likely to vote that no minorities would be allowed in their community.
Right. Now, keep in mind that there was nothing there to restrict him from being there or anything else. It was simply the social pressures of the area.
Right.
The common accepted social pressures. This is one of those talks where it was what, about 16, 18 minutes long? Is the upper range of time limit. But I wanted it to continue on. I wanted it to go further into the subject. I wanted to know more about it. I wanted to see more about what happened and more about the interactions. And I don't think this experience, while it was a good experience and it did kind of shine a little bit of light on it, I think there's so much more there that wasn't discussed in the talk and probably wasn't shown in the experiment overall. And that it's one of those things where I just wish there was more to it. There's more meat. I want to know more about it. I want to see if others are willing to do similar but contrasting experiments in other neighborhoods with other ethnicities and things like that. I really wanted more. I want to know more. I want to see more.
Yeah, I loved it. I usually go for the short ones because I'm short on time or whatever, but I had quite a bit of time this week, and I actually watched a lot of TED Talks, and it's so weird that we both picked the same one to talk about. But yeah, I could have watched a 2-hour documentary about this.
Mm-hmm.
This would have been great. And he said, what was the quote that he, or the saying that he said, like one black man makes a friendly dinner guest or something like that, but 50 black men make a ghetto.
Right.
Which I guess is like an old saying or something like that. I'd never heard it before, but that's the feel that I get, like, just from my own personal experience being around people. Granted, in this community, I'm around, I'd say 90 to 95% white people. And nobody that I know, especially none of my friends, are going to mistreat a person of a different race or be a complete asshole to a person of a different race. But get a group of these people together and they're going to talk bad. Like, racial jokes will come up. Or they'll say, like, if it wasn't for those Mexicans using our welfare or something, like, comments like that, comments like that come up. But not a one of these people that make these comments in their own group, not one of these people is going to be a dick to the people that they're talking about in their closed groups, you know?
See, I find it interesting because you grew up in rural white America.
Right.
You grew up in Oxford, Indiana, who within its entire 175-year history has had a grand total of probably 50 people of non-Caucasian descent growing up there. There have been people that work there and things like that, but as far as actual people growing up in that area, it's
pretty
sparse.
That's probably a fair number.
It's pretty sparse. I grew up in Southern California, in Palmdale and Lancaster, California, where my perception when I was growing up was that I was the minority as a white kid.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know the actual demographics, but that was my perception. Of course, it could have been that I was the geekiest kid on the block as well, so that might have been more of a social bias there. But I was the only one walking around reading Dragonlance novels on the bus and things. So
you're white and nerdy.
I was ostracized by my own ethnicity. but I found it extremely interesting because in California, while I was growing up, there was a lot of racial tension, and it never escalated so much as my junior year at Highland High School, where I was part of the stoner group, sitting in the, you know, against the wall, hiding from the school police or whatever, and there was an actual like race riot at my school.
Mm.
And it was, I'm not even sure how it started. I think the idiot white kids were going to put on like a show of force or whatever out there at the basketball courts, thinking that would incite the black kids. And then, and essentially what it came out to is it was a three-way fight between the blacks, the whites, and the Mexicans. And of course, me and my little group of mixed whatevers, we were just sitting on the side watching the whole thing, amazed that was actually happening at our school in front of our eyes. And yeah, that was just one of those crazy things. Then I go to Indiana. I moved out there for eighth grade, so 89, 90 time frame. And it was me and one other kid that moved from Southern California. He was from San Diego. I was from Palmdale. And we move out there, and we're the brownest kids in the entire school. School of 1,500 students, a middle school and high school. 1,500 students, me and Alan O'Brien are the darkest kids in the entire school. And that was kind of an eye-opening experience because now I remember certain kids in ninth grade would tease me, harass me by asking me for my green card because my last name's Lemos. I remember very distinctly sitting in algebra, Miss Ayersman's algebra class, and she would leave the room, and like three of these idiots would turn around and start asking me for my green card, like, "Oh, we're gonna get you kicked out of school because you don't, yeah." And I had never experienced that before directly against me. Now I had been the corny white kid running away from the sound of gunshots before, you know.
Sure, sure.
Never the shooter, always the runner, just so we're clear. but then to have it thrown in my face like that in Indiana was just far and away, like, it blew me out of, wow, what is going on here? And that distinction there, and that's probably why I'm so interested in I hate the word race as far as that goes, ethnicity and in demographic relations, is because I've experienced both sides of it firsthand, you know, the racial undertones and, you know, just kind of everybody arguing with each other about stupid shit, and then the straight flat out thrown in your face. Mm-hmm. And I always want to see more of this. I want to see more discussion on it. I want to see it over.
Right.
I want to see it done. And then I translate that to current times. And in the military, I see it a little bit. There's some segregation in the military. It's not institutional segregation. It's segregation of, it's member segregation. You know, you see a lot of Hispanics hanging out with each other. You see a lot of blacks hanging out with each other. See a lot of whites hanging out with each other. And you can see some intermingling at work, but typically in the social arena, at least in my experience in the Air Force, it splits off. It splits off pretty distinctly. I just want to see all of it done and over with. But then I see the same thing happening with gay people now. And again, it blows me away. It's like, just end it. Can't we just be over with all of this? You know?
Yeah.
Last night at karaoke, two dudes were sitting in the front, and they were sitting in chairs next to each other, and they were cuddling and holding on to each other, you know. They weren't like making out or anything, but they were clearly a couple.
Right.
And I saw the tables around them slowly get up and leave.
Mm.
To where it was them sitting at a table by themselves, and then the three tables that would be adjoining them were all empty. The people didn't leave karaoke, they just got up and moved further back in the room.
Right.
Away from this couple in the front. And then at the end of the night, the lady that sang the last song of the night, she's gay. And she had complete support by everybody. And that was kind of a like, okay, so nobody wants to be around the gay dudes, but everybody's willing to cheer on the gay chick.
Well, yeah, that's the way it's been for the last...
Right.
Well, for our lives, anyway. It's like, ooh, lesbians, yay! Ooh, faggots, no. God, no. Oh, you sinner. Really, guys? Come on. Come on.
Yeah, I just... It bothers me. It really bothers me. Can't we all just get along, you know?
Yeah. So Rich Benjamin said, racism without racists. And I think that's very applicable because nobody's a racist. No. I love everybody. I'm not a racist. But racism exists in our communities. The communities dislike or disassociate from other communities. But interpersonal relations, it's all good. Because most people take, like the gay couple in your example, take one of those gay men and one of the straight men that moved away, whatever, and put them in a conversation together, they're going to have a great conversation probably and be perfectly fine with each other. But
yep.
It's the gay, and I hate to say these terms even, the gay community and the straight community, they're just not intermingled. They...
socially segregated.
There you go. Exactly.
So, exactly. Yeah. And
hopefully one day we will move past that.
Yeah. Hopefully. Okay, so one more thing real quick. I wanted to bring up the situation, the whole talk that that Rich Benjamin had, and then seeing that last night. Because I put it all in the same group to me. You know, the whole social segregation is really what it comes out to. I think I like that term. But because it fits so nicely between all these different biases that we hold as a group. There's a book out there that I was forced to read, and I say forced to read because I didn't enjoy reading it until maybe years later. John Howard Griffin wrote the book Black Like Me. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And in this book, the author goes and pretends to be black, goes into the South, and wants to experience the bias that black folk see on a day-to-day basis. He integrates into these black communities, these families, and he basically, he's a hobo. He goes and he stays with different families throughout. Some families find out that he's not black. Some families never find out. Mm-hmm. But he goes through and he journals all this, and I would highly recommend this book to people that are interested in this stuff. It happened in the 1950s. It was great. Like I said, I didn't like reading it at the time. I don't think I understood it at the time. I wasn't. When was that? It was Lerp's class, right? Like maybe ninth grade.
No,
yeah, something like that.
Eighth, ninth, tenth, something like that.
I was not at a place in my maturity to fully appreciate the work. I'll tell you that. Mm-hmm. And it's only 208 pages. I might pick this up and read it again.
Right, right.
I might still have a copy of it that I stole from Benton Central.
But plus it's a homework assignment, and fuck homework.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I'm reading a Dragonlance book. Fuck reading this other
A Dragonlance book. I read like five in that class, right. hidden behind my copy of Black Like Me.
Oh, you too?
My bad. It might have been Stephen King, but most of those were in hardcover, and
right.
Well, it's harder to hide a hardcover book. So, but I would recommend anybody read this if you're interested in this idea of social segregation and how things are actually working in America. Go ahead and read that. I think a lot of that is still going to hold true to this day. So we'll have a link to that book where you can find it in the show notes.
Yep. Cool.
So, all right. And speaking of which. Yeah, I don't know where I was going with that one. It like completely blanked. This is a preview of my stand-up show right here. I just completely blanked. The thought just stopped. So, geeky things of the week.
Yeah. I did not watch Fantastic Four.
Oh, that's what FF stands for. Got it. I am not going to watch Fantastic Four.
Yeah, right. When it comes on Netflix or Hulu or HBO
No, I'm going to watch it as part of my MCU tour, but that's about it.
Well, it's not part of the MCU, so you're safe. You don't have to watch it. It's a Sony property, so
done. But it, man, but is, usually, it, is it canon in the Marvel universe?
No,
it's okay,
its own
good.
Thing. Normally, when a Marvel movie comes out, and it doesn't matter if it's MCU or if it's X-Men or Spider-Man or Fantastic Four, even I rush out and I see it. Well, right. I think I was camping when this came out, and I have read. Now, I don't read spoilers, but I will read people's impressions. Everyone across the board, without fail,
universally has agreed.
Zero good to say about this thing.
It's not worth the gas to spend on the way to the theater, let alone the actual ticket price, right?
Not buying. Unless it's a free ticket, I'm not going. I'll spend the gas because the theater is like maybe 5-minute drive from my house. I'll spend the gas, but that's it.
Dude,
I'll even buy the popcorn.
Everything in Alamogordo is 5-minute drive from your house.
That's true. Yeah.
So, unless you get hit by traffic, that's the only thing that's going to stop you.
Right. No, but my true geeky thing of the week, though, is a lot of behind-the-scenes work on this podcast. One of the titles that I've kind of invented for myself is the Chairman of Guest Relations. And I spent a good portion of this week crafting emails and responding to emails that I've received from people. And I'm not going to reveal any names, but we've got a hell of a lineup of guests that are just about ready to come on. We're doing some logistical fine tuning and some scheduling, trying to make everything work, because almost across the board we're dealing with three different time zones. You in South Korea, me in New Mexico, and then wherever.
And then this person anybody in to be. Anywhere else, because nobody wants to be in mountain time zone.
Yeah, who the hell is in mountain time other than me? like me and
Scott,
like
Scott Johnson. Scott Johnson.
Yeah, George R. R. Martin. That'd be.
Oh well, yeah, because he's in the same state you are. Maybe.
Yeah.
It depends on if he's doing a con this week instead of writing a book.
Right. No, but we do. Believe me, folks, we've got some fairly heavy hitters, especially in the nerd realm. We've got some good people lined up, and please stay tuned. This is kind of what I was alluding to in the beginning part of the show. With our growth, part of growing a show and part of growing a community around a show is to get noticed, to get more people to become involved. And the higher the profile your guest, the better you can promote it and the more people that will be interested in it, and they will come and they will see your product, and hopefully people will like the show and stick around. So. Right.
See, and this is why you are the guest relations guy, because I'm just too blunt and honest. you like to put things in a way that it's easy to digest and understand, and I just don't care. So we have some really cool shit coming your way. I personally only know two of the guests that know of them. Like, I know who they are, because Kent likes to keep things secret for me, so I don't get my hopes up on things. I know who two of them are. Next week we have Mikhail Abdullah coming back. He's going to do a review of Ant-Man and shoot the shit with us and let us know what he's been up to in the last couple months.
Yep. It was a lot of fun having him on last time, and I've heard from people that they enjoyed his appearance on our show. So we're bringing him back, hopefully with better audio. It's going to be a great show. I can't wait for next week.
Yep, and so that's going to be cool. The other one that I know of, it's not guaranteed yet, but man, that is some super exciting stuff. And don't think that we're just doing this because it's the podcast or whatever else. We are genuinely psyched to talk to these people.
Definitely.
And not just meeting new people, but meeting people that we've known about, we've digested, we've consumed their works for years. whether it's, you know, comics or movies or novels or blogging or YouTube or, you know, whatever the case is, it's all really good stuff. And we're not bringing people on. We don't want people on the Rich Woman Misery podcast just because they're people. These are people we actually give a damn about, that we really are psyched up about. Right. So, yeah, really exciting about all that kind of stuff. So, but also you're planning on building a studio. So what's the latest on that?
Yeah, well, okay. So it looks fairly promising that I'm going to get this job that I've been seeking. I got an email today or yesterday, one of those. The days kind of blend in when you're retired because you don't have to get up and do anything unless you decide to.
What? I'm sorry.
So it was either yesterday or today. It was either yesterday or today. I got an email saying that my application has gone through all of the automated wickets and is being forwarded to the hiring manager.
Right.
And then I got another email. Oh, that must have been yesterday, because I got another email today saying it basically scored my application along with my resume and the other attached documents and whatnot.
Right.
I have no idea how to read the score, but it's but yeah. So I got that. Well, anyway, so the next step in the process is to
you could probably just call Ricky tomorrow.
Probably.
She's like a pro at that whole.
Well, I've got a lot of GS or WG, federal employee friends that would be able to decipher it, I'm sure, or in family even. Bill and Mary Lee, I know you watch the show sometimes. Yeah, looking at you guys, and others that I know that could probably decipher it for me. But yeah, so I'm really excited. I'm very very confident that I'm going to get this job. Not getting my hopes up too high, but I have a reserved confidence, I guess we'll say.
Okay.
If that's the case, I'm going to be able to maintain my lifestyle, probably even upgrade to a point. I mean, it's not like, you know, ridiculous. I'm not going to be making like six figures or anything crazy, but.
So what you're saying is you're going to get a webcam that's actually worth a shit. Got it.
Well, yeah, probably. among many, many other things. No, but several episodes ago, actually probably many episodes ago now, it's probably close to 10 episodes ago or something, that I was talking about building a studio into my outbuilding that I have in the backyard. Too big to be called a shed, too small to be called a garage.
Right.
So I'm thinking about basically splitting that building in half and turning the front half, or I guess the nearest to the house half, into a podcasting studio. And if I get this job, that's going to be a reality for me, because I will have guaranteed income that's going to allow me to maintain or exceed my current standard of living. I feel like I could almost justify it now. But if I get this job, I can definitely justify it. Yeah. Because I'll have a real income at that point, in addition to my retirement pay and everything else. So I feel like I'll be able to do it. And this weekend, I think I'm really going to start brainstorming and like dream building. We'll say that. Not brainstorming, dream building for my studio, and not do rinky dink things like for the YouTube viewers. You can see, like, this is the sort of thing that I use for my soundproofing. It's just this, you know, egg crate bed mattress thing, which is fine, which actually is very effective, but it's very cheap, and there's much more high level solutions, I guess, more efficient solutions that they do cost a little bit of money. But also, just it's going to become basically a remodeling of that outbuilding, so it's going to be fairly expensive, but it's something that I finally feel like I can justify doing it. So that's something that I'm pretty excited about, and it's kind of going to be on the horizon. I'm going to dream build on it tomorrow. kind of come up with a plan and just get an idea of what materials I'm going to need, cost, that sort of thing.
I'm going to start off with the 3 Mac Pros and just...
Three?
Yeah, three Mac Pros with three each 4K displays on, you know, on each one. Just have a full surround system and screw the Oculus VR and everything else, man. You just boom, there you go. You know. It's like,
well, you know what's probably going to happen. I'm going to pimp this place out, so it's going to become my man cave, my just regular everyday man cave in addition to the studio. So yeah, there's
no. But you already have a man cave. You just need to clean it up.
Well, yeah, you know.
You've got a geek cave, a man cave, and now you're going to have a studio. You just need to, you know, set your priorities right and get things set up the way they need to be.
Yeah, well, whatever.
All right. So so my geeky thing of the week this week was doing some improv. I actually didn't do the improv. We had our first Battleprov, first public showing of Battleprov on Sunday night.
And Battleprov?
Battleprov. It's kind of like Whose Line Is It Anyway, except the points actually matter and people slowly get eliminated. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. We had some technical difficulties in the beginning of the show, which I'm actually supposed to be going out and buying a couple of cables to alleviate in the future today. It's only like 3:45, so I got time. But yeah, it was a great show. We did record it with two cameras. I'm currently trying to learn how to mix camera angles in and on Final Cut Pro. And once I get that done, we will be releasing at least skits of that, if not the whole show. A lot of improv doesn't take well to audio, and it doesn't take well to video. So shows like Whose Line Is It Anyway... they record 4 hours of video for a 22-minute show. You know what I mean? So it's you kind of have to take cuts and pieces and this and that. But
sure.
definitely have some highlights for that popping up on the Ritual Misery feed eventually. So that's kind of one of my current side projects. Again, I didn't actually appear in the improv. I did all the sound stuff in the background, which you and I both know is the more enjoyable aspect to me, being the production manager. So, but it was a lot of fun. It was a really great show. There's a couple times when I'm sure the audio is nothing but me laughing because I was just laughing my ass off and sitting fairly close to one of the cameras. So it's
oops,
very very good times. Yeah, it was hilarious. It was so good. So we had a good show. We sold out the place on a Sunday night, which was rather impressive. We actually had so many people show up on a Sunday night that on Tuesday night when we normally do practice, the owner of the place bought us dinner. So, and there's, what, 9 of us? So,
oh, wow.
Not a small feat.
Yeah.
Bought us this big buffet of dinner, had it delivered, and we chowed down and then did some practice, and then I had to be at work at 4:30 in the morning the next morning, so.
Nice.
Yeah, it was rough. But yeah, that was my geeky thing of the week, so. And
cool,
here we are. So when we started this episode, we really didn't have a main topic. We had a lot of stuff we wanted to catch up on and a few things we wanted to talk about, but we didn't really have a main topic, and we were worried about the show length, to be quite honest. We are now 50 minutes in, roughly, and I think we've had a pretty good show. So I think we made
up for it. Oh, I've enjoyed it, man.
Yeah.
I've enjoyed it.
Rich Benjamin piece was really good. So,
right, yeah, we kind of geeked out over that video. So you know, thanks, Mr. Benjamin, for that talk, because that was we want more of it, man. But guys, seriously, tune in. The next few weeks are hopefully anyway are going to be kind of a roller coaster ride of flurry of guests. Starting probably unless we record a show before then, next Thursday we're looking at Mikhail coming back on, and probably going to be a whirlwind of guests after that are, as of yet, unannounced. We might actually even record a show between now and Mikhail. So just stay tuned, guys. We're going to do our best to get the announcements of the shows out on the social media so people will know that, oh, hey, tune in Thursday, 9 a.m. for whatever. We're going to try to get better at that. Just tune in. Just keep listening is all I'm trying to say. You will be rewarded if you keep listening. Keep listening. You will be rewarded.
Right. All right. But yeah, McCullough is he's slotted for 8 a.m. Mountain Time. 8 a.m. Mountain Time next week, next Thursday, right?
8 or 9. We'll get
nine,
it. We'll
9 o'clock his time, so it's 8 o'clock your time.
Yes, that is correct. But, 8 a.m. Mountain Time.
Nobody not says Mountain Time. I'm half a world away.
So it's 9 a.m. Central Time. Nobody refers to Mountain.
Right, because there's only like four people that live there. You, George R. R. Martin.
Scott Johnson.
Scott Johnson. And like some dude up in some white ranch up in northern Idaho.
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah. So there we go. If you do want to read Black Like Me, we're going to have a link to the Amazon link on there. And anytime you want to buy anything from Amazon, go ahead and click on ritualmisery.com/support or just go to ritualmisery.com and click the link on the right side of the page. That's going
to
give...
Or just click the link. Just click any of the links in our show notes and it will take you to it.
Yeah, if it's a product thing, we'll have it linked up. That just cuts us a couple percentage points of whatever you purchase. It doesn't cost you anything extra, but helps keeps the show going.
Yeah, so maybe helps one day out I'll a lot.
Maybe one day I'll be able to afford a studio like Ken Stream enough. all right. I've been lax on it lately. I need to pimp OLCC, the O Lounge Comedy Cast. I've got so much to do and get pushed out there, but it's some great comedy showing up here around the Osan area that I'm releasing out as a podcast on the Ritual Misery site. Go ahead and check that out. It's good stuff. And
It's absolutely NSFW, but it is quite funny.
Oh yeah, it's adult stand up comedy. So there's nothing. It's not something you can listen to at work unless you work at a really cool place.
Right, right. unless you work at a comedy club.
Yeah. In which case, they're just gonna be mad you're listening to something besides their show. How can listeners keep track of you and what you got going on?
The main way to follow me is at @rm_delnoche. I have been lax on the Twitter lately, but
yes,
I'm going to try to get back in on that. Also, if you're a beer guy like me, you can go to ratebeer.com and look up username Del Noche, and you can see what I've been rating lately. It's been a few weeks since I've rated a beer, but I'm going to start doing that again soon, too. I'm getting all back up in the social media in the very near future.
Welcome, so welcome back to your life.
Yes.
Even if you're not into beer, if you're not a person that likes drinking beer and you want to find out what kind of beers might be good for a person like you, something that you can kind of key your interest in on, ratebeer.com, and especially if you want to look up Kent's stuff, username Del No J.
Absolutely. Or you can just tweet me and I will give you a recommendation based on your tastes. I will personalize a beer rec for you.
Oh, goodness. Now he's actually throwing commitments out there. Dun, dun, dun. And he froze. The internet said, no, you shall not rate beers. There you go. Now you're back.
I was just about to comment. I don't know if I froze or if you froze.
Oh, well, apparently it was you because I heard myself the entire time.
Well, what I said before the freeze was that if you are unsure what type of beer that you might like, you could even hit me up on Twitter, and I will give you a personalized beer recommendation based on your own tastes, free of charge.
Basically, if you like Budweiser, he's going to tell you to throw it away.
Yeah, I will point you in the direction of some better quality,
some beers. Actual good beers. Oh, like Left Hand Chocolate Stout. What?
Ooh, yeah, that's good.
That's so good. you can follow my exploits at Ethan Kane on Twitter. Follow the show at Ritual Misery. Throw ideas into our show. I'm gonna find a mouth that works here in about 2 seconds.
I'm backing away. Backing away from it. I am not going to comment.
If you see something you'd like to hear us comment about, you can throw it on the subreddit, ritualmisery.reddit.com. You can email us from podcast@ritualmisery.com. You can call and leave us a voicemail, 567-69-TRMPC. That's 567-698-7672. Of course, you can find all these links and more ways to support the show and give feedback at our website, ritualmisery.com. Thank you so much for Kevin McLeod for offering up this music. You like how I did that, huh?
I know. Kevin McLeod's awesome, man.
I changed the entire outro script here, so it made a little bit more sense and it kind of threw off my timing, so whatever. And we thank you, our listeners, for listening, and our watchers for watching. For Kent,
both
for me,
you.
For you. This has been your Ritual Misery Podcast.
See you guys. Love you.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Can you believe we've been doing this for like a year?
Yeah, it's about, right about a year, yeah.
Yep.
Crazy, huh?
Crazy.
We're going to be like Current Geek. We're going to be a year and a half in to have a year worth of episodes.
Right, right. I think we've doubled our audience. And we love both of them. So.
we doubled it from the zero that we had to the carry the one, the zero we have now.
No, we do. We really do love both of you. Tell your friends, maybe we can double again.
Oh, the self-deprecation continues.
Oh, I know. No, but we're in a growth period, though. We're moving up in the world, and it's only going to get better and better. We'll get into that.
Yeah, yeah. Is that what your non-topic is today? All right, so we're going to go ahead and start. Let's do this.